In the book Can't Buy Me Like, you talk about that the old ways of advertising, kind of our old tried and true methods, are not working anymore, and that we're in a new era, the relationship era. So tell us, what is the relationship era?
That is a place and time wherein it's pointless to start dictating messages from the top of some sort of now vanished power pyramid to the hoi polloi below, because nobody's paying attention. And by the way, you can't reach everybody all at once the way you used to be able to for about 300 years anyway. So the forces have converged that has to change the way all consumer brands and all institutions, you know, we're talking about Dial soap and also the White House and the Vatican, have to change the way they connect with people. And it's just not by blathering anymore. You have to person by person cultivate relationships, kind of values-based relationships of the sort we're all used to, but not necessarily in commerce. And in the relationship era, the rules that have applied to just plain folks also are going to apply to businesses and everybody else with stakeholders. And
so
it's good news.
It's good news. Now, why is this good news?
Because one of the forces that's converging is a sudden interest that I can kind of prove with data and do in the book, that people care now as much about the values and the worldview and the conduct of a brand and its corporate owners as they do about the goods and services themselves. So you got to have the goods, yes, but you also have to be good. And they talk about you behind your back. They don't listen to your ad messages particularly, but they do talk about you a great deal with their friends and circles on social media. We are all of us now in glass houses, whether we like it or not. You know, there's no more corporate fortress to protect us and all of our secrets. Now it's all kind of a common currency on the internet and Googleable in perpetuity. So it's kind of like he knows when you've been sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows when you've been bad or good. So be good for goodness sake. In the relationship era, even the most, you know, venal companies have to play nice.
Why do we seem to care about these values and how a company acts now? Do we care just because now we know about these things better because of the technology and social media?
Yeah, there's a hilarious and filthy joke, which I can't tell, but the punchline of it is because he can. And I don't know why all the survey data points to a growing interest in corporate conduct, behavior, values, how you're treating your workers, how you're treating the environment, how you're treating your shareholders, how you're treating all of your stakeholders, including your employees, and you name it. The data are very clear that suddenly, you know, in the last 10 years, this has trumped even the goods and services themselves. I suspect it's because of the rise in social media and because of forced transparency that now that we have access to this information, we care about it. When we didn't have access to it, when it wasn't common conversation in our social circles, you know, it didn't bother us. But now how a company behaves matters a great deal.
So this is the relationship era. And as you were saying before, companies, corporations have to treat consumers differently, more like friends treat friends or humans treat other humans. How does a multi-billion dollar, perhaps international corporation do that with trying to reach millions and millions and millions of consumers? How do they make it feel like a relationship?
Well, it's a three-step process. The first is panic.
Panic?
Yes, because that's what big multinationals are doing. You know, they understand that to participate in social media, this is not just all about social media, but to participate in this new digitally connected world, they have to let go of control. There was never a word that passed the lips of a CEO or in an ad that wasn't vetted thoroughly by teams of very pricey lawyers. And now your company's reputation could be in the hands of a $21,000 a year, 19-year-old social media assistant, right? Who is holding the keys to the kingdom because she or he controls the send button. The other thing is to get the idea that that people care about what you think about you out of your head. Nobody cares what you think about you. They only care what they and their friends think about you. So if you think you're going to manipulate, persuade, flatter, or even entertain your way into their hearts and minds, forget it, man. You got to be a mensch.
So this means different vehicles for communicating, Twitter, Facebook, email, websites, whatever the case may be, different than, you know, broadcast TV ads of decades ago. But does it also mean different content to the messages? I mean, can you use the same message, just send it out a different way?
The future of marketing and the future of relationships and the relationship era is all about sharing. It's all about doing things together. It's all about finding people who finding this Venn diagram overlaps. You remember Venn diagrams from fifth grade? Well, the relationship era is all about Venn diagrams, and every institution, from a brand to the United States Congress, has a many shared interests and values and so forth with very many different constituencies. And you have to go to each one of those Venn overlaps and just spend time together, which is very time consuming. You know, it's like cultivating a garden. You can't ever let it go, or, you know, nature will swallow it. Well, it's kind of like that in the relationship era. People have to be committed to forging and cultivating these relationships based on shared stuff, sometimes shared efforts. Sometimes, hey, I just thought this might amuse you, or I thought this could help you, or let's work together to do the following. Who knows? But the future of marketing resides in those Venn overlaps, and you can't advertise your way into them very successfully anymore.
This sounds like a shift then in thinking that has to happen not just in the marketing, advertising, communication department of a company, but it's got to happen in every nook and cranny of the company. I mean, if the top dogs don't buy into this philosophy, it's not gonna happen.
Well, let me give you an example. In our book, we talk about a case of Secret, the deodorant.
Oh, now, yeah.
The idea of a deodorant made by Procter & Gamble having a purpose, you know, that the brand can get behind and have reflected in all of their actions and inactions worldwide, it sounds kind of stupid and silly and kumbaya on the face of it, but it's not, in fact. You know, I think every business person has to think about what drags their sorry butts out of bed in the morning. What is it that motivates them? If it's maximizing shareholder value, they're not going to do very well in the relationship here. But if they can figure out why their brand exists, why they go to work, what good they're doing today for the world, and that drives their brand's everything, well, then it's easy to work from there. However, Secret did this. They did it brilliant. They started a movement which wound up in getting ski jumping for women to be sanctioned as an Olympics event. It hadn't been. They started kind of a petition campaign on Facebook because it coincided with their brand values, their brand purpose. And they actually changed the world, not Procter & Gamble as an institution, but the movement created among us a deodorant brand and the people who have interests, took interest in ski jumping. And weirdly, Procter & Gamble has this fantastic case history which proves what they've been saying in public for years now, and yet they have done nothing to change the way their corporation rewards its employees in terms of promotions and bonuses and so forth. People at Procter still get better jobs, you know, within the company and make more money based on doing things the old way than the new. And Procter even knows to a moral certainty that the relationship era works, but, you know, the battleships and aircraft carriers do not make sharp turns.
Yeah, they don't turn on a dime. Can you talk about a company that just doesn't get it at all, that is still stuck in the old ways, and that they're kind of sinking or really paying the price because of it?
Well, there's a million of them. I must say, most people who get involved in social media think that it's just another channel for advertising, and they do it wrong many times a day, every day. They are just sending out ads and promotions and via a different medium, and that is not relationship era thinking. My favorite example is McDonald's, which does some, you know, which, you know, they got multiple problems. Number one, nobody is paying attention or believing their advertising anymore. Number two, they sell junk, and that at a time in the society when that is now deeply frowned upon, and they're really struggling to deal with the actual chatter out there. It isn't good for them. But they're heavily involved in social media, and they thought, well, here's a good way to sort of distract people from the obesity epidemic. Why don't we ask people to tell McDonald's stories? Because everybody has a, you know, a cute McDonald's story. So some people met their spouse there. So, you know, some the kids lost their first tooth there. You know, there's a million warm and fuzzy things that happened there. But you know what? Of course, they didn't get the warm and fuzzy things. People told their McDonald's stories in social media. They told the time they found the Band-Aid and the cheeseburger. They found the, you know, the puddle of urine on the bathroom floor. That's what came out in McDonald's stories from customers and employees alike. And they must have been deluded into thinking that this was an advertising campaign and everybody would just like toss out the stuff that didn't help and focus on the stuff that did. No, this is not messaging. This is conversation. And they forgot that there's, you know, more than one person in the conversation. It was phenomenally stupid.
So then also a quick case study of a company that's gotten it exactly right from top to bottom. They know why they're existing, and it's not to increase shareholder value, and they're able to communicate that effectively in a relationship framework.
Well, there's a number of them that we talk about in the book. One is Patagonia, the outerwear company, which is very dedicated to making as little an environmental impact as possible. And they have very, very progressive workplace policies. They're very careful on source reduction and so forth. It is their founding principle. In terms of shareholder value, they happen to be privately held, but what we discovered and also can prove with a whole mess of data is that companies that begin with purpose as a point of departure actually perform better in all metrics in the marketplace than companies that don't. They spend less for promotion and marketing. They have higher profitability. They have higher shareholder value and so forth. They become sustainable, and Patagonia is a great example. Krispy Kreme donuts, of all companies, everything they do comes from wanting to share the joy that is Krispy Kreme. It's almost a religious fervor behind the company, and it's expressed not just at from the C-suite, but on the loading dock and at the counter of the donut stores and everywhere in between. They want to bring joy to the world through donuts, and they're performing quite brilliantly. A few years, they're a good case history because a few years ago, their company was expanding wildly because they were making every decision based on on cash flow and on growth metrics, and they lost true north, and the company was a historic disaster on Wall Street. Now that they're purpose-based, they have gradually built themselves back up in terms of sales and profits and share price, and they're doing very, very well.
So we know the sort of fragmented media and consumer markets mean that the old-fashioned just sort of TV ads, newspaper ads, those just aren't gonna work anymore because it's hard to reach a mass group of people in the same way. So what's going to happen to kind of the advertising industry that we're familiar with right now? I mean, is it going to just disappear? Do those folks have to go get retrained? What's the future here?
Well, it's happening. It's been happening now for more than 5 years. In my last book, called The Chaos Scenario, I kind of laid out what would happen, and either because it was obvious or because I'm a rarefied genius, it's one or the other.
Or both.
Yeah, I would put my money behind the obviousness, but it's all happening just as I predicted it would. And the agency business, it's a pretty big sector of the economy, is in free fall. The media business, much of it is in free fall, the mass media business, that is. And there's, you know, panic and everywhere and some blood in the streets. But it's not entirely apocalyptic because the forces that have broken up big media and big marketing are yielding this relationship era, which is just going to be a way better place to live. I mean, imagine a world in which companies had no choice but to behave well and to behave with purpose and to embrace values, where values have a cash value. I like that idea. That's, you know, there's maybe the... Maybe the people at Coca-Cola Company think that we're in a dystopia because they can no longer advertise their way into our hearts and minds. But, I like having great expectations fulfilled by by people who I just used to do business with because they sold stuff I liked.
And just to wrap up here, your contention is that when companies follow that path, have a purpose, marshal their forces around that, they can't help but be also be profitable. It's not they have to do that just because it's good or the right thing to do. It's also they're going to make money that way now.
You know, you can still be a poorly managed company with a bad product and still fail, even though you're purpose-based, right? I mean, it's not we're not talking about fairy dust here. But the companies that have embraced purpose-driven marketing and have recognized that they can no longer dictate to the world and that they have to kind of clean up their act have performed extremely well. They wildly outperform the stock market in general and their competitors in the same categories. It's kind of jaw-dropping. So that's all good, I think.
Do you talk to business school students and advertising students? I mean, do you go in the classroom with this?
I sometimes do, and the advertising students say, "What should I do?" I say, "Change your major." what's the only answer? Dentistry is not going away. So it's kind of a buzzkill when I go into the advertising curricula because it's not going to be pretty.